Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new Sprinter Sessions right here on Receptopia. Happy Monday to you all as we begin another week where we don't see Spencer or Trina on General Hospital. I'm Keela Cash, and yes, we are 6 weeks into Spencer bereavement. And unfortunately, sadly, and unbelievably, we are week three into no Trina potentially on our screens, inexcusable. And we're going to get into the why very, very soon. But joining me, as always, is my co-captain, my right hand, my ride or die, someone who's going through it a lot lately, dual droughts that we would not even think could be a possibility, but it is in the here and now. But we're going to make it through this dry spell somehow, some way. I bring to you back on the sessions, as always, Jasmine. Welcome back, Jasmine.
Hey, Keela. Hey, everyone. Happy Monday. And yeah, this is an interesting place and time to be in because we already knew and expected that we weren't going to have Spencer on our screens, like, you know, because Nick is off filming Monsters, which I still can't wait to see. Looking forward to that, counting down the days when we get that. But I feel like we would have been perfectly fine with this situation if we were getting Trina on our screens consistently. And that has not been the case, at least not for the last, apparently, possibly 3 weeks, if we're not getting Trina, because MIA right now on this show, which is really sad.
It really is. 3 weeks of spoilers every Friday. We don't get the week ahead anymore. We basically get once a week spoilers, and she's not in them. So basically, you got to hope and pray that when you tune into GH at the very end at 2:58 p.m., Eastern, Pacific, Central, Mountain, wherever you live in America, if you tune in at 2:58 and you're trying to see the next day preview for GH and Trina's not there, that means most likely she might not be in the episode. And even then you have a wing and a prayer. If you watch the intro and you don't see her, then you're fucked. Or you hope during the first segment after the commercial rolls to credits, then you can say, oh, she's going to be in the episode. And if not, then we're fucked again. So we are possibly looking at 3 weeks of zero Trina. And to me, like I said last week, it's inexcusable. It's unacceptable. There are simply no excuses for this. This was a choice by the writers to sideline Trina during this time. I have seen so many reasons to explain away why this is happening. And I can tell you that it's due to, plain and simple, the writers refusing to write the story that needs to be told, because Trina's grief is right there. Do not be mistaken. We don't want her to cry all the time on screen because that can be exhausting. But I think the one thing we want to see is anger and being pissed at how she lost the love of her life and going after the people that did not protect him or her. And the failure to see that on screen is sticking at me in a very bad way. And not only that, we get to see someone appear on screen multiple times that could potentially be on screen more than Trina this month. And they get to unleash and they get to spread lies and they get to tell their side of the story that they don't have any idea about because they weren't there. And we'll get to that person soon enough. But I am so tired of the criteria of what it means to grieve on soaps, that presumed deaths don't mean much, apparently, that you have to die a certain way for it to mean something, that you must die of a horrible disease. You got to get shot and killed. You got to get blown up. You have to be body in the bag in order for people to say, oh, here's your chance to grieve. If it's presumed and there's no body, well, guess what? You don't get to grieve. You don't get to showcase your feelings. You don't deserve that spotlight. And I wonder why. Why is that? That the Black woman doesn't get to grieve the same way as her white counterparts, who get to have moments of lashing out at those who took their love away from them. I've seen it for decades. And the fact we got people trying to tell us what we need to know about soaps. Give me a break.
Huh. Oh, my goodness. You know, You just made me think about something. Like I said before, I love having these conversations with you. I really do, because like there'll be things that I'm thinking about, and then I'll forget about stuff, and then when you start talking, then it makes things wake up in my brain, like the light bulb just turns on. But yeah, I'm sick and tired too of this whole this unspoken rule that supposedly just came out of the woodworks after Spencer went off the ship when Trina watched him go overboard. Like all of a sudden, the rules of the soap genre have just changed overnight for all of us. It's like, oh well, like you said, Keila, because he's presumed dead, and oh, he's coming back. You guys know he's gonna come back, so we really don't need to do this. We really don't have to see it. Like you said, like I've seen every single excuse, everything under the book to explain away why we're not seeing Trina, the black female, getting to grieve the loss of the love of her life when she watched him go in a very traumatic way. We're not getting to see any of that happen. And people keep on saying, like, it doesn't have anything to do with race, but we get things like people saying that there's a major storyline involving all legacy characters on GH, and it's okay for Trina to not be front and center right now. If she was moping while this was going on, it would be jarring, and talking about how soaps have been writing multiple storylines for years. So what you're telling us is that all the white women on the show can have their moments of quote unquote moping, and that's not jarring. But when the black girl wants to mope, which I'm using the term loosely, because Trina is not moping. This is the love of her life. She's not moping. She actually watched him go. She watched him go overboard off of a ship, but she is not allowed to grieve. It just makes absolutely no sense to me. And like you said, she hasn't been given the opportunity to lash out at the people that basically enabled Esme to do the things that she did. And it actually is really, really frustrating that she has not gotten to express her anger and irritation, because let's be real, Jocelyn got to express how angry she was at Sunny when he took Dex away. She literally looks him in the face and says, "I hate you." So she got to express her anger for a man who, by the way, is alive and well and was just shipped off, sent away for safekeeping, essentially. But Trina, like I said, who witnessed her boyfriend die in a horrible way, does not get to read the grandmother who took the snake under her wing, calling her sweetheart 24/7. She doesn't get to say anything to Auntie Alexis, who also enabled Esme. But the frustrating part about it will always be the fact that Trina doesn't even realize that half of these people enabled Esme the way that they did. Like, sure, she knows that, you know, Laura took her under her wing by letting her move into the house, but she doesn't know a lot of things, and that falls squarely with the writing. So this whole idea that Trina isn't allowed to be shown grieving and being frustrated with all the people around her is just really, really bothersome. And like I said before, like the whole idea of, well, Spencer is going to come back at some point, so it really doesn't matter. Like, we really don't have to see her this way. It's really, really irritating. And one of the things that was brought up that was a great point, which was Fluttermy, she actually said something that I really appreciated, because she tweeted, she said that as viewers, it's hard to invest in stories or feel the emotional impact if they skip beats. Having Trina off screen with no POV will have their reunion fall flat. And then she says they can't just completely stop and have us care when they choose to suddenly put focus back up on a story. That's jarring, which it is, because this is the thing. If you're going to have us be invested in characters, and then you want us to feel the magnitude of something like Spencer and Trina reuniting after he's been presumed dead, then you need to be showing us right now what Trina's going through. Like, we need to be seeing that pain. You can't just pick and choose at General Hospital. Like, it's like, you can't do this thing of picking and choosing and saying, okay, well, right now, like, you know, because that General Hospital is contributing to this. They're contributing to that whole thing of the presumed death storyline, and oh, he's gonna be back. Like, they're making it seem like that means it's okay for them to minimize and push down Trina's grief that we don't have to see it. And it's like, when he's back, we will lift it back up and then we'll start showing Trina's grief and focusing on it again, because that means that they're going to be getting ready to reunite. That's not how it should be. Trina can have story with Spencer not around. And like I said on our last show, it just, to me, feels like it's this whole thing of the thing that we kept saying of, well, when Esme is, you know, that Esme only has story when she's around Spencer and Trina. And that's why I feel like they've taken this thing and they're trying to be like, well, guess what? Trina doesn't have story either because Spencer's not in her life, which isn't true at all. Because when Spencer was in boarding school, guess what? Trina had fans. People were tuning in to watch Trina before Spencer came back from boarding school. So this idea that she can't have a life without him on, you know, without him on the screen with her is just absolutely ridiculous. So this whole, we can't write for her right now because, you know, Spencer is not here. So what do we give her? It's lazy, because we've seen them do it with everybody else. We've seen them give all these other people stories and emotional beats. So what's the difference with Trina? What's the problem?
It's a serious problem. And I'm tired of the excuses as to why you can't allow her to tell this story. And you made a very valid point in that when it's time for Spencer to come back, we missed all those beats in between, unfortunately. We missed all those emotional moments, and it's a true shame. And I'm hoping that we can hop back into that imminently, and you're just not going to do so when it's time for Spencer to be undead. And I just think that I'm tired of people trying to move the goalposts, trying to say, well, a presumed death isn't the same as a real death, and sometimes characters have to be put on ice for a bit to tell other stories. No, you can do multiple things at the same time. They're just choosing not to, and that's truly a shame. And it's frustrating as a viewer, because I want to see Trina. I want to see a through all of these stages of grief and want her to go through the numbness of it all. And maybe, as many people suggested, wear his clothes, you know, smell his scent, wear his skin in some ways to say he's still here, he's still present. We haven't even got that yet. And I feel as if they're just dropping the ball so much. I don't know how much can be repaired between now and the spring, because so much damage has been done right now, and it's unfortunate. And I just wish that people that should know better stop making excuses as to why Trina can't have this story, when I've seen so many people, from Elizabeth to Sam to Maxie to Carly to Robin, get to express their pain and their anguish, whether it was a permanent death or presumed. I saw them go through it. I saw them try to fight for their love through any means, go through a burning building, go through stuff to find out what's going on, dive in the water in the scuba diving outfit to see, where is my guy? Where is my love? And we haven't got that with Trina, because they're not allowing us to see those moments on screen for whatever reason. And the reasoning right now isn't working for me whatsoever. I said it last week. It is writing malpractice for them to do this on this level. It's Chris and Dan. It's Frank, for allowing this to go unchecked for so long. And we're waiting patiently for that change to kick in. We're waiting for Patrick's material to come through. But the wait is exhausting and it's tedious, because you're missing these moments that you can't get back. And when you're playing catch up, yes, someone's return is on the horizon, God willing, but you want those beats to matter. You want to feel it. Yes, it's presumed death. Yes, it's not permanent, most likely, but you still want to feel that weight of the loss. And thus far, we haven't gotten that via Trina's lack of airtime. And it's a shame, because Tabiana is willing and ready to go with the material, but you're not giving her the tools to do what needs to be done to excel on screen. And that is a true shame.
And it's not to say, like, you know, going to your point of like us not see, even seeing things like as simple as her wearing like one of his hoodies or a t-shirt or something that makes her feel some type of way. Like, could you imagine if she like had one, if she had like his, say, for example, like she had his suit jacket from New York, like, you know, how she wore the suit jacket when they got back to the hotel room, like something like that. Like, it's just like a lack of imagination to me, like with GH and the writing and how they just miss these important beats. And it's not to say that, like, I'm not saying that, like, things like The Dove are not important, but, like, Trina has other things from that are from Spencer besides The Dove, because the, you know, The Dove is important too, but, like, she has, like, the necklace, which we haven't seen, you know, because I don't know what's going on with that. She, like I said, she could have a piece of his clothing. She has, like, the art book, the, you know, the Malino art book, which she got back off screen. She has that. So it's like, there's just a whole bunch of different things that they could be having showcased. Like we're not even seeing her, like, even sitting up looking at pictures of the two of them, like, nothing. Like, it's just, it's just frustrating when I keep thinking about why can we come up with all of this stuff, but they can't. And then all I image just goes back to, they can do it. They're just choosing not to. It's everything is a choice. Everything is a choice. And they're choosing right now to minimize her POV.
And it's frustrating as hell. We fought for this over the summer and we thought we were doing better. We thought we were improving, moving in the right direction. And now we're like sliding backwards. And this is willful to do this on this level. And it's so disappointing to see. And it's frustrating as a viewer. And all we can do is continue to call the ABC hotline, call the GH comment line, write to ABC, write to Disney, contact advertisers, and let people know that Trina's voice matters, because it simply does. There's no excuse as to why it should not. And this campaign that Sabrina Nation started nearly 2 months ago was the exact reason why. It's so sad that you have to be preemptive on stuff that should be so easy for this show to accomplish, but they're incompetent and they refuse to do the simple things, the things that you shouldn't hesitate to do, the no-brainers. And sometimes you just gotta laugh to keep from crying, because we've been through this and it's been happening repeatedly on soaps for so many years with Black female leads. They get these opportunities and then they're stripped away from them and then they don't get them back. And as we've seen before, they disappear. And I don't want Trina to disappear off of General Hospital, because she's such a viable, rich character. And it just feels as if they're trying to see what they can do in this time that Spencer's not on screen, in this time that Nicholas is away filming Monsters. Let it be known that Trina Robinson was a viable character before Spencer's return to Port Charles in 2021. She had the friends. She got the family in 2020. She had a sense of community. She was moving about Port Charles, interacting with the Quartermains, for crying out loud. That Ned basically said, let me sponsor your art exhibit, because you're cool and you're smart and you deserve this. She was the toast of that art gala. And now it's like she can't go to work. She can't really maneuver around Port Charles, even in the midst of her grief. You've taken away so much in the past month or so. And they tried to do that a couple of years ago by stripping her of her job at the gallery. And we got that back last year, thankfully, but now it's gone again. But Ava says it's always there for you, which is good. But it's so annoying that the little things that we need to see, we're not seeing, and that it should be an easy thing to do, and they simply won't do it. Because I think in the writer's mindset, they think that Trina's existence and her viability is tied to Spencer, when that should never be the case. Trina can stand alone. Tabiana can do her own thing while her screen partner is off doing other things and killing it, and he'll be back soon, God willing, and they can create magic together. But it is not her being dependent on this character in order to get screen time. She can do this independently. And that should challenge the writers to say, let's make sure in this time that this is her time to shine. Let's give her the material to thrive. And it's very interesting that someone gets that material with consistency, with regularity, and then we wonder why Trina doesn't get the same opportunities.
And guess what? This whole thing, going back to Trina being a viable character, you know, even when Spencer wasn't on, I mean, all we need to do is look at the stuff that was going on during Trina's trial, because Spencer and Trina were not interacting. There was very minimal interaction between Spencer and Trina while she was going through the stuff with her trial. Then there was that period where Spencer was in prison, so we weren't seeing the two of them interacting. And then we can even go back to last year when Esme came in and blew up everything for the 511th time. And guess what? We barely saw Spencer and Trina having scenes together because they had him stuck at the house with Esme for months on end. And they had Trina in her own stories. They had her doing things off on her own. But now all of a sudden, when Spencer's actually gone right now, they all of a sudden can't write for her. They can't come up with anything. You sure could come up with stuff when Spencer was alive because you were keeping them apart. So what's the difference? I mean, really, what is the difference? The difference is that you have to showcase Trina's grief, her frustration, her anger. But the problem is that they don't seem to want to allow it. And that is highly questionable, in my opinion. Like, for reasons unknown, they don't want to give it to her. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it just doesn't make sense, because realistically, there's some stuff that they could have done. Like, you know, when we start really like discussing the episodes, I will bring it up again. But I'm just saying, like, there's things that they could do that they're just choosing not to do. And if our fan fiction writers that we keep on shouting out all the time can fix these things and make stuff make sense, then these GH writers should be able to do the same.
Yes. And I do want to shout out our fan fiction writers and a campaign that's starting today. And you can use hashtags stories for Trina. And I want to shout out ZL because this is her brainchild. And it's basically a week of prompts. Guess what? Writing stories for Trina that you would love to see on GH. And I can guarantee you, you would get dozens and dozens of ideas for the next 5 days as to why it's so easy to write for Trina Robinson. It will blow your minds how easy it is to craft stories regarding Trina's grief, her reunion with Taggart, her real father, and how the reunion between Spencer and Trina will go, and what stories you want independently for Trina, and what adventures you want the couple to go on upon Spencer's return. And I will guarantee you, the imaginations will run wild, and you will get to see so many fresh, creative ideas that these writers could do, and hopefully with Patrick at the helm, he will do. And then you can understand why we're so fucking upset, because this character is too damn dynamic to be bitched at a time like this.
Facts. Preach on it.
In the midst of our frustration, and when you go through what we're going through right now, which is frustrating as hell, there is a bit of hope. And there is a ray of light, and we're going to talk about some blockbuster news that broke on Wednesday, right at 3:00 p.m. Eastern. It's funny how breaking news and soaps always drops at around 3:00 p.m. Eastern, right after GH. So I'm just minding my business on Wednesday afternoon, you know, watching GH. You know, I think I'm done for the day, and then my phone alert goes off. And it's Soap Opera Digest breaking some blockbuster mega news that we have not seen in soaps in 25 years. Multi-time Emmy Award winner Michelle Valjean, who recently left Bold and the Beautiful, is now heading as a showrunner, executive producer, and head writer for a brand new show in development, a brand new soap coming to CBS Daytime for the first time in nearly 40 years for them. First soap in nearly 25 years, period, since Passions debuted in the summer of 1999. We are entering the Gates era of Daytime. It is going to be about a rich family. It's going to be about a prestigious Black family who's limited up somewhere in America. And we're going to get to see this multi-generational family showcased on screen. It's in development. We got a ways to go. It could take months or years to hit the air, to be fair, based on articles that I've read from all of the heavy hitters, Variety, Deadline. It's the toast of the soap world right now. And this is huge news, a partnership with Procter & Gamble and the NAACP. This is huge, massive news. Everybody freaked out in the best possible way. I legit said, holy shit, when this news broke. And this news was so big that the Gates, that has no cast, we have no setting, we have no time of arrival, it was trending nationally, not for your entertainment, not in for you, in the United States of the Americas. That is massive. The buzz is incredible. And it feels like there is new life into this genre that we thought was on death's door. Let's not lie about it. But to think now, Jasmine, that somebody with a concept, an idea, and money, those things paired together, can possibly create a seismic shift in the soap landscape and give people options in the next couple of years to say, you know what? If I'm not being served on GH, if I'm not being served on Days, YNR, or Bold, the Gates are open for business.
Yeah, see, for me, when that news broke, it was 12 noon my time, because I'm in California, so it was Pacific time for me, and I was like, wait a minute, hold on now, what is this? And I was very, very excited when I saw that, that when I read the article about it, like, seeing what Sheila Duxworth, the president of CBS Studios, had to say. Like, I loved her statement that she put out, because she said, and I quote, "The Gates will be everything we love about daytime drama from a new and fresh perspective. This series will salute an audience that has been traditionally underserved, with the potential to be a groundbreaking moment for broadcast television. With multidimensional characters, juicy storylines, and Black culture front and center, the Gates will have impactful representation, one of the key touchstones of the venture." And as soon as I read that, I said, yes, 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 let's go, let's do this. Because the soap genre, which we talk about all the time, is not very friendly to Black viewers. Like, we don't get representation properly the way we should. Sorry, GH, I'm looking at you right now, because your representation for Black people is poorly lacking. I don't care what anybody says about, oh, well, GH has Black cast members and blah, blah, blah. To me, it matters what you're doing with those Black cast members in that particular moment in time. And what I'm seeing right now is not good enough. It's subpar. We had Curtis, one Black character on all the week before last. One Black character on our screens the entire week. So what am I supposed to do with that? Hmm? And then you're not giving them stories that are meaningful. And when you are giving them stories, it's them having the same conversations over and over and over again that they've already had. So you're not really giving them any movement that's realistic. And if you are giving them movement in their storylines, it's happening too fast. It should not be happening as fast as it is. But guess what? It is. So I'm looking forward to what the Gates is going to do. Because when I looked at 7 o'clock p.m. my time, the Gates was still trending on Twitter or X, whatever. And like you said, Keila, we don't even have a cast yet. Don't even have the setting. None of that stuff. All people heard was Michelle Valjean, Black soap opera, let's do it. Because guess what? We're not getting it anywhere else. So it's like, if you're not getting it from someone else, you're gonna get it from a different place. We're tired. Like, it's like we keep on depending on the soap operas that we've had for decades on end to deliver, and they're just not. They're falling short every time. Because it's like, if you look at, like we talked about, if you look at last February, we had Curtis and Portia's wedding. We had Black Hospital. It was, it was amazing. We were seeing all these Black people on our screens basically every day doing these major things. And then we get to this February and they're not doing anything. Nothing at all. The owner of the Black nightclub, the Savoy, is just at home for physical therapy all the time. So I'm just saying, like, you're not giving our characters the movement that they deserve. Like, it's just not being done. So I'm hopeful that the gates will do that, and I can't wait to see it when it, you know, when it does come time, and I'll be keeping my eyes open for when the casting starts.
My eyes will be on every Gates-related news item for the next year or so. It's going to take some time. Patience is a virtue. We'll get there. But I'm so excited. And the first thing I thought about was something I said on the podcast during our most important episode last July alongside Lindsay. I told the story of how wrestling and soaps parallel each other. And I told the story of when WWE crashed creatively in 2018, the fans were tired and they were going off on Twitter. This show sucks. I feel underserved. I feel unheard. I want something different. And Cody Rhodes, who is going to be headlining WrestleMania next month in Philadelphia, come a long way. He said, oh, what the hell is going on? Say less. We got you. Here enters All Elite Wrestling, because if there is a fan base who is hungry for good professional wrestling and somebody has capital, they got money, they got resources, they got connections, and they got an idea, they can make shit happen. And they've been around for 5 years. They got 3 TV shows across 2 networks, and they're making a lot of money, and they got money to pay some big contracts to a lot of people. And the cool thing about this is with the Gates, opportunity presents itself. That you can't tell me that people that work for CBS, that people that are in the NAACP and Michelle Valjean did not see the outcry of what we've been talking about, not only for Sabrina and Trina, but across all the soaps over the last several years, that spaces are being listened to, that people are observing what you say, and they are saying, if this audience, if this African-American audience is not being given good shit, let's give them something good to watch. And here comes the Gates. And when you have an idea and money, if this show is successful, you can bet your ass ABC, CBS, NBC, they're getting back in the soap game, because it's viable again. That these talk shows y'all peddling, yeah, they're okay. But if you get a soap that can clear those demographics you're looking for so desperately, and you're producing a good show, the people will come. I love competition. Iron sharpens iron. It worked for WWE. This other company pushed them to be better, and now they are better. Sell out shows, sold out arenas, stadiums, ratings are up, and they're getting younger. And I hope that happens for the Gates, that it's an opportunity for this show to grab a younger audience, and that you're grabbing some vets and new people to your show that can bolster it to a brand new height we haven't seen in decades. And I also hope that these shows that are on the air right now, GH, YNR, Bo, Days, your motivators do better. The Gates are letting you know we're ready to throw down. And I think this is great for the industry. It's great for fans that you have options now, and that your voice can be heard to create this kind of change, because money talks and it's big business and it's exciting. I love this kind of competition because it makes everybody better, and it puts people on notice that next year, if contracts are up, believe that soap free agency will be a very real thing. And I am looking forward to that, because I have been waiting for such a long time for GH to be challenged. You got the new writing team. Now you got a new show possibly breathing down your neck against you head to head every day, potentially at 2:00 p.m. Eastern for 30 minutes to an hour, 5 days a week. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to still stick to the same old and not change? Or are you going to adapt, or will you perish because you're stubborn? Because now you got options. The Gates is an option. And I'm glad about that.
Yeah, me too. And I just keep on going back to that. This series will salute an audience that has been traditionally underserved. Like, I keep thinking, because, you know, that brings up, you know, a great point about what you said about people are listening in spaces and all that. So I would like to think that what this came from. Like, I feel like people have been listening to these spaces for months on end. I mean, because when you think about it, like, people like Ashley have been hosting spaces for a very, very long time, for several years now, GH-based spaces, talking about Trina and, you know, all the Black characters on General Hospital as a whole. So somebody somewhere probably was tuning into these spaces and all these different places and said, I hear these people and they sound really frustrated. Like, I feel the need to fix this, because there's always somebody out there who's listening, and then they find there's a demand for something, and then somebody takes the call. They take up the call and they lead the charge, and they say, you know what? I'm hearing these people constantly talking about the lack of POV for these Black characters, the lack of stories for these Black characters. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to take what these people are saying and I'm going to create a soap opera that's going to serve these people that feel like they're not getting the stories that they want to see. It's literally the same way it is for an author. When, you know how they say, like, if you're not getting the stories that you want to read, write them. Like, you know, you write the stories that you want to read. So it's basically like Michelle Valjean and, you know, and all the people she's working with on this saw this and said, you know what? I see it too. Like, just like what you guys are complaining about, I'm seeing the same problems. So we're going to fix this. And so I hope too that this lights a fire under GH. I really do. I hope that this makes GH wake up and realize that, hey, what you guys are doing is not working. Like, it's not working anymore, because people want diversity. It's 2024. People are looking for diversity in the things that they watch. We don't want to see the same thing we've been seeing for decades on end, over and over and over again. We're tired of the same bland stuff we're getting, and GH needs to realize that. People want something different, which is why people gravitated towards Spencer and Trina so hard, because it was something new and fresh that we haven't seen done in a very, 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 very long time, specifically within the soap genre. So I'm ready for the gates. Like, bring it on, because I'm ready for GH to have some competition. And my only question is, what time is it going to air? Because if it airs at 2 o'clock, GH, y'all should be scared.
They should be scared. CBS says, we got three soaps. Y'all got one. And we're going to, like, basically make you the fourth place bitch if you don't get it together, basically, essentially. And I love a good competition. Hey, compete with Bold. Compete with YNR. Make it fun. And the best thing about the Gates news is that the fact that a Black woman is a showrunner and the creator, and Michelle Valjean, who was on GH for a very long time and left to go to Bold. You know what, Jasmine? I checked her resume. You know what she did on Bold?
What did she do?
She kept winning Emmys. Ooh. You know, she racked them not one, not two, four Emmys during her tenure in the last dozen or so years. You know how many GH racked up in that time frame? Zero.
Yep.
Nothing. So she's successful. So good luck to Elizabeth and Patrick, who's also a winner, by the way. He's got trophies on his shelf. Elizabeth's been waiting for 15 years. 15 long years. Went through several writing regimes and you ain't got nothing to show for it. So here's your chance now to step up and do something for the home team. You got a year to get it together. Good luck to you both. But shout out to Michelle, who's been successful in everything she's ever done. And now she is going to bring forth her concept to shake the table. And as John Lindstrom said, she might have saved daytime itself. She might have saved it from the brink of extinction. We're not exaggerating, because Procter & Gamble, who sort of the kill off of soaps back in 09, 15 years ago this year, by the way, Guiding Light gone. As the World Turns gone. Then it was All My Children. Then it was One Life to Live. Really started with Passions back in 08. But you saw the bloodletting. We went from seven soaps to four rapidly. So things can happen in a blink of an eye, and you bring in the Gates that's going to bring diversity on screen and behind the scenes, God willing. You're going to get black directors. You're going to get black writers. And God willing, they're going to be young people that can shepherd this show into the future. If they're blessed to have multiple seasons, that should wake up this old antiquated system of old white guys wanting soaps. Like, if that happens, hey, GH, Days, Y&R, Bode, it's your turn. Diversify your writer's room. Diversify your director's room. Diversify everything behind the scenes. Because if the gates are setting the tone, you got to fall in line.
Yep. Because it's not going to be a good look. It isn't. If you're just catering to one group, one demographic all the time, good luck to you. Because that's not going to be the way to sustain yourself. And the gates is about to show that. Because like I said, people want something new and fresh. And good luck.
Good luck. That's all I have to say. Good luck. Good luck. Because I look at GH's numbers. They're not only losing 18 to 49. Those numbers are horrific. Like, those 18 to 49 numbers are bad. But what's scary is that they're losing older people too. Mm-hmm. And when you lose old people and they're not coming back, those are the lapsed viewers Nathan was talking about. If you lose the old people, they're not coming back. So you know what the next strategy is. You got to go younger. You have to attract a younger audience. Actually go there and grab them. And they're there. They're there. They exist. But you have to be able to produce good shit and showcase your younger cast. And we see the teen scene trying to get reset for this generation. If they stick to it, that's your opportunity. You have the young adults who are viable. You have Sabrina. You have Jex. You can give them good shit to work with. But you have to put in the initiative to do so. Because I feel like the show's plateaued in the last 20 years. And it's not getting younger in terms of their cast. It's getting older. And they have to focus on that. And when you're losing old people who are your bread and butter, that is a problem. So now you got to get younger. And that's what they need to do. Find that younger audience. Engage them by producing a good show. And if the gates has got to kick you in the ass in order for you to do what you need to do, so be it. It's a wake-up call to everyone that if someone is listening and they hear the cries and they want to say people need to have an alternative and people are tired and they're tired, trust and believe they're tired, here comes the gates. An idea and money can change everything. You never know who's listening. You never know who's watching, because if they're seeing something that feels as if, this pocket of people who love soaps are being underserved, I got something for you. And I got money, an added bonus. I love it when I say money, because money, money, if people have money to put into this, that is scary in the best possible way, because magically shit happens.
I'm already getting excited. I'm ready to see where we go with this. I'm ready to see them moving around different locations.
I want the budget. I want the sets. I want everything. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited too. You can tell, because I love shit like this. It gets me going. It really does. It's like wrestling and soaps merge into one. I love a good competition. We're going to get that very soon, hopefully next year. Fingers crossed on that. Congratulations, Michelle Valjean. You did that, sis, on Black History Month Part 2. Mm-hmm. We got a big ass surprise, because you're doing big business, sister. Congratulations to you. And now we transition to General Hospital and the things that we saw this week, because me and Jasmine, we are doing the Lord's work, because we watch the show for those who say, you know what? They're not getting my eyeballs. And we completely understand. If you feel as if you need to take a break, take that break. We got you, for better or worse. We're watching so you won't have to. And, you know, there are moments in the last couple of weeks I just wanted to say maybe we need to take a break from the sessions, because Trina's not on. And I watch GH and I continuously get pissed off. Mm-hmm. And it happened again on Monday. and Mondays already suck. But then you add what we saw this past Monday, and I was immediately irritated because we saw Heather Weber at General Hospital for some kind of checkup bullshit. Oh, my back hurts. Oh, I got a rash. I don't give a fuck. And she's chained up to the bed, and we got Portia and Elizabeth there. Elizabeth is getting the sweet greetings from Heather. Oh, hi, Elizabeth. How are you? Hi, sweetheart. Hi, lovely. Don't give a fuck. I love Elizabeth. But ugh, really, Heather? Really? But then we get to Portia, who is the co-chief of staff. And I have figured something out, Jasmine. Mm-hmm. So as a doctor, even if you hate someone with every fiber of your soul, you take an oath to do no harm, mostly. You take an oath to be respectful. You take an oath to do the right thing. You take an oath to provide the best care for your patient. And so Suzanne Flynn, who wrote the breakdown, you know, she thought it was a great idea for Portia to interact with the mother of the psycho bitch that terrorized her daughter, tried to drug her not once but twice, and had a hand in Spencer's presumed death. And she has to show this woman grace and mercy because it's in her job description. So therefore, Portia can't go off the way that she should. Because she has every reason to go off on a woman that enabled this behavior, that told Esme, shh, don't tell them you have your memory back. You need to keep the lie going to live your new life and snow everybody. She knew this for weeks, and she let it carry on until her daughter did the unthinkable. But she's the victim. She's the one that was scared. She was the one that, oh my God, I don't know what to do with myself. Like, that's exactly what we've been seeing on screen recently. But Portia is unable to express those feelings because she's a doctor in a professional capacity, and she can't cuss that bitch out. But you know who she can go off on, Jasmine? Chaplain Cyrus.
Yep.
She can go off on him because he's not a patient. He's a visitor because baby Ace got an ear infection, and he was there for his sister Laura in her time of need. And Portia goes off on him. What are you doing here? Why are you here? I know what you did to Trina when you ran into her at the gallery and you didn't walk away. And then these fucking writers, Suzanne, you raggedy, you know what? You reconned a conversation at the gallery months ago when Trina went off on Cyrus, rightfully so. Beautiful performance by Tabiana. And she told Spencer, who she hugged so tight because he was her protector, that's her Superman. And she told him, don't tell anybody about this because I don't want to see anybody see me like this and how I reacted. And he says, I'm not going to tell anyone. So you're telling me that Trina, who told Spencer in confidence what not to say, that she ended up telling her mother, and she goes off on Cyrus because plot point, because Cyrus is a big bad wolf and he deserves all the smoke, even though he went to prison. And granted, he got out on some bullshit. He snuck, you know, he maneuvered his way out the pen, but he did his time. He apologized numerous times. Is he contrite? Does he really mean it? To be determined. But Portia had all this ready, available smoke for Cyrus, but she had none of that for Heather, who deserved it way more than Cyrus did in this case. Not to say what he did was wrong, but what Heather has done and who she enabled, oh, that's 10 times worse.
Yeah, when I saw who was responsible for the breakdown, I immediately knew that we were in for some crap. I knew already based on the preview that we were in for some crap, but when I saw the breakdown writer, I was like, oh yeah, today really is going to be garbage. Like, it really is. But Heather talking to Elizabeth and, you know, saying all that hi, sweetheart stuff, I was like, it's funny to me that she is so nice to Elizabeth when Elizabeth was one of the people who held Esme captive too, but she has like endless smoke for Nicholas because of what he did. But with Elizabeth, it's like, oh, sweetheart, hey, it's good to see you. Like, I'm, you know, how are you? And all this stuff. But when Heather saw Cyrus and she saw, you know, Laura, and she went off and started talking about Esme once again, I was just thinking about what you said about Portia and how, you know, you guess if she's, you know, if she's a doctor or whatever, then she has to be nice to Esme. And to Esme's mother. And I'm like, huh, yeah, like she's the only one who has to be nice, because as I keep saying time and time again, Dr. Britt Westborn and Liesel Ulbricht, they've never had a moment where they were really, really extra nice to someone that they despised when they came through those doors of GH. Like I said before, they would be telling you to go straight to Hades while they were treating you. They would treat you, but they would read you at the same time. So this idea that Portia is not allowed to do this. And it was really, really frustrating to me when Heather was in the hallway and she's yelling and screaming and talking about, you killed my daughter and all this stuff. And she yells at Laura and says, I told you what Esme was going to do. And Laura doesn't even really react. And Portia doesn't react. I thought that was the strangest thing, because in that moment, they could have actually had Portia be like, wait a minute, what? Like, what does she mean? You told her. Because Portia wasn't aware, as far as I can remember, she wasn't aware that, you know, Laura was called up by Heather and, you know, all these things, and that she had this conversation with her about, you know, she's going to go after Spencer and Trina. Like, I don't recall Laura passing this information on to Portia. So that's a reason right there for Portia to have some smoke. And while Heather was screeching about, you killed my daughter, and then telling Laura, is this why you did this? Is this why you did this? So you could have my grandson? You did this? Like, basically saying, like, you and your brother are responsible for my daughter's death, and I think you did it so you could get custody of my grandchild. Absolutely ridiculous. Ridiculous writing. But in that moment, Portia should have looked at Heather and snapped on her. She should have snapped at Heather and been like, this was your daughter's doing. Your daughter went after my daughter and her boyfriend. She followed them to Paris and she tried to kill my daughter. She killed Spencer. Like, you know, all these things. That's what Portia should have been allowed to do. But no, Portia has to be nice to Heather because she's a patient. And I took an oath to be nice to patients, no matter what the circumstances are. Like, they even had Portia have smoke for that officer. When the officer was asking questions, she was literally like, I'm going to treat her, I'm going to take care of her, blah, blah, blah. Like, she really snapped on the police officer too. I couldn't believe it. I was just like, what are we doing right now? But when she sees Cyrus, it's on sight. It's never ending. And I'm like, why are we having her repeat this conversation again with Cyrus already, with the stay away from my daughter? Like, we've already done this. And like you said, Kilo, when they had her mention the conversation that Trina had in confidence with Spencer, it was like, wait a minute, so when did Trina tell Portia this? Because Trina seemed pretty adamant that she didn't even want her mom to know about this, and she told Spencer. It actually made me think about when she had that conversation with Spencer on Christmas, when he stopped by the house on Christmas in 2022, and she said, don't say anything, when she told him, you know, when, you know, her mom and, you know, Curtis had set up this winter wonderland in the house, and she says, don't say anything, and he says, I'm not gonna. And guess what? He didn't, because there was nothing that was found out. Like, Portia and them didn't find out that Trina wasn't thrilled, and, you know, that this, you know, all this, the winter wonderland they set up didn't make her mood any better, because Spencer held that, he kept that in confidence, because he knew that Trina trusted him to keep that a secret. So why would they make it where it was like Trina told what happened to her? Like, why would they do that? Because she was very, very clear that she didn't want her mom to even know about that at all. But all of a sudden, Portia knows, like, why? And it was just because they wanted to give Portia a reason to go off on Cyrus, to divert her away from going off on Heather, who was the person that really deserved the smoke that she had. Like, it just made no sense. And then Heather has the audacity, the absolute audacity, when Laura says, I lost my grandson too. She says, Heather says, at least there is some justice in the world. I said, this biatch. Like, no, they did not have her actually say, at least there's some justice in the world. Talking about Spencer going overboard is justice. Like, your daughter is the one who followed them. She could have kept her stankin' self in Port Charles or left town just like you told her to. But she chose to go after Spencer and Trina. She made all of the decisions. Every single choice was made by her, and that's why she ended up where she was. So this whole thing where they keep on writing for Heather to screech and cry at everybody, Cyrus, Laura, and blame them for Esme's death, it's getting ridiculous. Like, every time Heather starts blaming Cyrus again, I'm just like, what are we doing? Because it's not even Cyrus's fault. Cyrus knew the bare minimum about everything. And as you said, Keela, as you pointed out several times, when Esme came to Cyrus, she presented the amnesiac. She didn't let him know she remembered everything. She came there like she still was some innocent that didn't remember anything. She didn't let him know, look, you know, I know this, this, and this, and blah, blah, blah. It was literally like, oh, he took my baby. Help me get my baby back. If that's what it was. It was never her actually letting him know, I have my memories back. So I'm so tired of this writing that they keep on doing. Because like I said before, that right there, like I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Trina not being able to have her moments, this brings me back to what I wanted to say. Like, you know, because somebody, I cannot remember who it was, but somebody on X Twitter brought up that Trina could have had a moment to appear at GH during that entire exchange between Heather, Laura, and Portia. All of that. She could have stepped off the elevator at the moment, or walked through the doors of GH rather, and heard Heather yelling and talking about, you know, you're responsible for my daughter's death, you killed my daughter, and then even hearing her say, at least there's some justice in the world about Spencer going overboard, because then Trina could have snapped on Heather. That could have been a moment for Trina to confront Heather herself. Like, you know how just like on the pier, like, you know, the night that Heather tells Spencer, you were next, like you were supposed to be next, they could have had Trina have a moment to confront Heather for what her daughter did. But no, they chose not to do that. I mean, think about how many times we saw Trina at GH. Trina was showing up at GH for months on end last summer. Every time you turned around, she was at GH to visit Portia. Now all of a sudden, she's not there, when it could be them giving her a good moment of interaction where she just goes off. And I don't get it.
But Heather gets to go off over and over again, spreading lies. And the same thing that I went through with Ryan Chamberlain, I have to defend Cyrus, mm-hmm. who has done nothing wrong. He actually went in the chapel and prayed and seemed sincere.
Mm-hmm.
No agenda. He seemed like a guy that was genuinely trying to do better. And he didn't set the church on fire. Astounding. But then we get Heather, who constantly goes off and screams and yells and says that my Esme, my sweet daughter, she was scared and she was afraid and she didn't know what to do. Like, the bitch knocked out Kevin, took a credit card, booked a flight to Paris, got her ass on the plane, bypassed TSA. I don't know how she did that. Got on the plane, sat her ass down, and she was plotting revenge. She told you to your face, Heather, that she cared more about Trina and Spencer's insipid happily ever after than her fucking baby. You know this. You called it out. She was obsessed. She wasn't scared. She was vengeful. She wasn't scared when Spencer jacked her up on that wall. She was still talking mad shit. She wasn't terrified. She was defiant. Even in the end, she was defiant, trying to drug Trina, drug Spencer, and terrorize them both. There was nothing scared about her situation. She wasn't panicking. She was cold and calculated, and she was determined to do anything by any means necessary. That is your daughter. That is your psychopath that you did not raise, but you taught to do these things. That you taught to, hey, if you want something, go get it. That you was co-signing on her revenge tour when the time was right. You said these things. Laura knows some of this, and she refused to tell Portia. And that was an opening for Portia to go off. You knew what, when, where, and how, and you didn't do anything about it. You didn't clue us in earlier to let my daughter know she was in danger. And yet again, Trina's out somewhere. That's what they say. She's out and she's not at GH to confront Heather and Laura. about what happened, that Trina doesn't know Portia was buddying up to Esme over the summer. That has been completely retconned, because it probably felt like, oh shit, we're doing things a bit too much. Yes, you are, but you did that. You made that decision. You got to follow through on what you did, and not just let it sit in the dust. You're very selective of what you choose to remember and what you choose to make up for kicks on this show. So I just felt so upset that for all of Portia's faults, and I've dragged her on this show, and she has a right to her feelings about Spencer, despite how wrong she is. That's why we call her Portia Doug, because she's in her feelings. But in this moment, there's an opportunity for her to express her outrage as a mother. And she can't, but Heather, as a mother, as a white mother, gets to do that. It's very interesting.
It's like I said on Twitter, aka X, when I was watching the episode, it hit me that they have transferred all of Trina's grief and anger and given it to Heather. Like when I actually had that epiphany, it made me really angry. Like it actually did, because all I thought was, this is a story that could be going to Trina, but they keep on giving it to Heather to be able to constantly say, my poor baby, my poor daughter. They have her going to Cyrus in the chapel to try to cut him up with a rusty saw. And it just, it makes absolutely no sense. And shout out to Yella for what she did with that Thanksgiving setup, because I was dying watching Heather and her so unserious. But anyway, I don't understand why they have taken Cyrus of all people and turned him into basically Cyrus is a scapegoat. Like they've literally used him, and I don't understand how Cyrus got thrown into the mix with this. Like I really don't. Like when GH doesn't know what to do. No, you know what? Rather, GH does know what to do. They're just choosing to do the opposite, because GH does know what they could be doing with this storyline. But they find every single way to bring in the silliness and just make it where it doesn't make sense. It's like what I did when I posted that clip of Martin when he's throwing the stuff on the Christmas tree. That's flag ass. That's literally what it is. We're just throwing stuff to see what lands. We're just throwing things. Let's throw some Cyrus in there and say he's responsible for Esme's death. I mean, really, like that's what it is. And then, like, you know, just thinking back to what you said about Portia and how Heather gets to be outraged over what happened to Esme, it goes back again to me thinking about the fact that Portia has never, ever, 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 ever had her moment to even address what Esme did, like in a realistic way, like not even to Esme herself. They made her be best friends with her for months on end, which was completely pointless, because where did it get us? Trina doesn't know about this. Like everything we watched till the point that we've gotten to now, like it's like, what was that all for? Like, that's how I feel. Like when I think back to that, cause I keep thinking back to Chris and Dan and Frank, because Frank signs off on this. So, I mean, I can't place the blame squarely on Chris and Dan, because Frank does sign off on these stories to be told. But just the idea that they had Portia being friends with Esme for months and Trina never found out, like that to me makes that whole storyline a waste of time, because I really was like, are we going somewhere with this? What are we actually doing this for? And that's what I'm saying. Like it's been this constant thing of Trina not knowing about any of the stuff that goes on around her. It's the deception. It's constant deception happening around her that she never ever finds out about. And that's what I don't like. I do not like it, because when they do that, they take away her agency again without her being able to say anything. Like, because then it's like people will say, well, what is she mad about? Like, what can she be mad about? She can't be mad about this. She can't be mad about that, because she doesn't know. Like, that's basically what it is. Like, Trina doesn't know any of this stuff, so she can't really be mad. Because, like, I think about it over and over again about how Trina should be allowed to express her grief and her frustration and her anger. But then you start thinking back to the things that she's not aware of, and it's like, what can she say? Like, what can she say? Because she can't be mad at Portia for befriending Esme, because she doesn't know, you know, she doesn't know about that. And then she doesn't get a chance to see Heather saying all these horrible things about Spencer and his death, like saying there's, you know, there's some justice in the world because basically like Spencer's dead. Yay. But guess who we get to see be offended by it? And huh, pearl clutch moment, Grandma. Grandma Laura, which, okay, fine. She's allowed to have her grief too. But give that to Trina too. Give Trina the moment to step off the elevator and hear Heather say this vile thing about Spencer where she can say her piece. Like, why are you not... Sasha got to say her piece to Heather about Brando. So why can't Trina? You know what I'm saying? Like, why can't Trina? Like, it's to us, it's a simple thing. It should be a simple thing for Trina to be able to speak, but they are making it like it's this thing that she's not allowed to do. I can tell you one thing. If it was her best friend who stepped off the elevator, her best friend would have been able to say something to Heather. I mean, that's facts. Like, let's just be real, because they turn the volume down on the Black women, but they turn it up to max for the white women.
No lies. And I love Allie Mills, man. I love her. She's so good. But because of this storyline and how the character of Heather Webber is being written, it's making me resent Allie Mills's work when I shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I know Emmy bait when I see it. This is for the real. I know. I'm not stupid. But you can't tell me that Tabiana can't have the same opportunities to go toe-to-toe with Heather Webber, who, by the way, was the hook killer, who, by the way, was targeting people close to Trina. And Trina could not have her final girl moment last year. But Sasha... could. She could impersonate a lawyer, get in there, get a confession, and have her moment. Trina has never talked to Heather face to face to say, look what you've done to me. Look what you've done to me. Look what your daughter has done to me. And you telling me they can have a showdown at GH that's good fucking soap? That you could have Allie Mills and Tabiana go back and forth, and you got Portia, who's not going to be silent, step up and say, oh, no, we're not doing this. You're not going to be disrespecting my daughter and her guy that she was dating, even though I don't like him like that, but that was who she loved. And you got Laura sitting there still crying over Esme. Oh, she just made all of these bad decisions and I just feel so bad. And then she took my Spencer. Like, you're wasting your tears on someone who doesn't deserve it because she lied to your face. She lied to your face because Heather told her to. Like, this show thinks they can gaslight us. We saw the footage. It's not months ago. It's literally weeks ago that we saw this play out. And you're trying to make us think we didn't see what we saw with our own two eyes when we did. So I am so sick of them trying to make us believe what we see isn't real when it is. I already get enough of that from the timeline from people telling us, don't believe what you see. Mm-hmm. I don't need that from GH2.
Yeah. Just made me think about that because I just made me think about Laura sitting up there crying on that bench again about Esme. And maybe if she wasn't, maybe if she had that kind of love, she wouldn't have done what she did. And then she took my Spencer with me. I'm so, so tired of watching her cry over Esme because guess what, girlfriend? Esme wasn't even thinking about you when she got her memory back. She hid from you. She ignored your phone calls. She ignored everything. But you're still sitting up here crying. Like, she didn't come to you for help. She hopped on a plane and hopped on a ship and killed your grandson. That's what she did. She didn't come to you, Laura. She went on her own, went rogue. Come on. Like, this whole, maybe if Esme had this kind of love or this and that. And then the idea that she compared Elizabeth to Esme. Oh, Elizabeth's in there holding Ace right now, and I guess she probably reminds him of Esme. Are we really doing this? Like, what are you doing, GH? What are you writing? Like, you're having Esme compared to Elizabeth. Elizabeth and Esme are not the same, okay? Like this idea that they're trying to make Esme some innocent, some martyr, like, and just like having Heather, oh, she had to be terrified. No, I know she was so scared in the water and this and that. And you broke it down really, really well by you talking about how her entire mood, like her entire mood until she went overboard, because she wasn't sorry. She was not sorry for anything she did. She was literally on the deck talking about, there's plenty more for you. Like, she's literally like, I just dosed Spencer, but guess what, Trina? There's still some more in here to take care of you too. Oh, goodness gracious. And I need the most, I really do need this whole thing with Heather blaming Cyrus to stop. Cause like, I really do. It's just getting tiresome because like I said, it makes no sense to any of us because the conversation that they had was not even worth him being blamed for that girl's death. Not at all. Not in the slightest.
No way. And at this point, like, Heather is going to make me donate $40 to Chaplain Cyrus's fund. Like, if the collection plate rolls around, I'm dropping 220s crisp right at the ATM machine because she's getting on my fucking nerves. Like, I'm donating to a criminal chaplain. What is wrong with me? But that's what she's doing. And I hate this storyline. It fucking sucks. And I'm irritated. And it's making me dislike Allie Mills when I should not. I love this woman. She's phenomenal. But the storyline sucks. And unfortunately, she's being used as a voice for the writers who are upset that their sweet, precious Esme is gone. Well, I'm sorry. She's gone. And I hope she doesn't come back. With all due respect to Avery, I don't want this character back. Let her stay drowned somewhere in the English Channel because I'm over her and I'm over you trying to lionize her and martyr her in death. I'm sick of it. And unfortunately, we got two more days of this week on GH potentially, which is really going to get in my craw again. But we'll talk about that later. But we're done with Heather because I'm tired. We're tired as we transition very quickly to Hat Daddy, Marshall, who's not wearing hats these days. GH, you have one assignment, one thing that you should always do, and that is have a hat on Hat Daddy. I can't call him Hat Daddy if he's not wearing a hat. I just got to call him Marshall. Marshall. Doesn't even sound right. Marshall. Great. Marshall is talking about his schizophrenia with Aunt Stella and Curtis. To be respectful, Jasmine, I don't care. We've talked about this over and over again, and we've had resolutions to these conversations. Yep. Irene came up from the upper room and sat down next to Marshall and told him, baby, it's not your fault. It's okay. I forgive you. The boys still love you. Curtis is here and you're rebuilding your bond and that's all that matters. She came from heaven to say, please let it go. And 2 months later, he has failed to let it go when he needs to let it go in Aunt Stella. But I digress.
Oh, no. But yeah, no, I feel the same way. Like, I'm not, because I'm in no way, shape, or form, like, you know, saying anything against, like, you know, anybody struggling with, you know, any type of mental health issues, schizophrenia, anything like that at all. But them just having this be the topic of conversation 24/7 for Marshall, it's just getting old. Like, I don't understand why they keep doing this. Like, they keep having this be the topic of conversation for him and Stella, him and Curtis. Like, it's like they feel like the only thing that they can talk about is Marshall's mental health every time they sit down together. Like, I don't understand. Like, is this all you think Marshall is? Is just a man who is dealing with a misdiagnosis of schizophrenia? Like, how do you have him move on with his life if that's what you keep on putting as his storyline? Like, he's not moving forward. And like you said, I totally forgot about that until you mentioned it, that they brought Irene up from the dead to basically tell him, you know, you didn't do anything wrong. You thought that something was going on with you, something was wrong with you, and you're fine. Like, you can be at peace now and this and that. And so then having him go back to GH to find out he was misdiagnosed, and we already knew he was misdiagnosed, and then for him to sit up and talk to Curtis and Stella about being misdiagnosed and saying, like, I want to find out what exactly was wrong with me, but then he says, I don't want to find out, but then he says, Portia helped me figure out what was wrong with me, and it's like, it's just, we're just going around in circles. It's like they don't know what to do with Marshall's storyline. Like, that's how it feels. It feels like they don't know what to do with his storyline now that he's found out that he didn't have schizophrenia after all. And, like, the fact that he's just going to be sitting up, you know, and he's going to be sitting up with Kevin this week to talk about what we already know the answer to. Like, I just, and like, as far as them, like, you know, keeping the schizophrenia thing going, we already knew that part of it was because it had to tie in with them, you know, with Trina's paternity test, you know, with the paternity thing coming out, because Portia was so scared because she thought that that was something that Trina could be passed down to Trina because of, you know, Marshall and Curtis. So that was her fear. So of course they were going to do it for that. But now that we know that none of that is a factor in Marshall's life, we can stop. Like, we can stop doing this. Like, find something else. Like, I don't understand. Like, why can't you figure out something else to do? Like, even Gregory, who is you know, on his last legs, is getting more story and different conversations. He's not continuously talking about dying every week. So why can't Marshall get a different story besides just talking about schizophrenia all the time?
It's so circular. It's so circular. And as you said, even Gregory is not talking about his ALS every day. Yes, he's dying. Needs to die faster. But I know I'm going to hell, and I have made my peace with that.
It's make-believe you're good. It's make-believe you're good. Because we watched Weeping Willow for months and months and months on end. That's why I said GH will drag a story out when they want to. Yes. They can speed up, they can sure speed up storylines for certain people when they want to. But these other folks, oh, they'll drag it and drag it till the very end.
Yes. So he won't die, which is really unfortunate. And now he has like competing women for him. Like, he's getting like seasoned, mature women willing to hop on his dying dick. And it's appalling to me. And Hat Daddy, who is still rural in his senior years, is going to be sitting on Kevin's couch relitigating his past diagnosis of schizophrenia. And he talked about this on numerous occasions. And he needs to be stirring his gumbo and Aunt Stella, and he's refusing to do so. They're fighting the feelings.
Or he could still be helping Curtis with the Savoy. Like, he could be trying to help arrange music acts, you know, that are not Nitty Mane. Thank God that's over.
You know, that too. But I also want him to get some, Jasmine. He's been deprived. Then he could work at the Savoy. But the thing that really gets me is another storyline idea that could have been given to, I don't know, Trina, who needs to be on Kevin's couch. Mm-hmm. Who needs to be talking about what she's been going through. And you know what? I love Kevin. I love John Lindstrom. You know I do. But it would give me great pleasure if Trina could just cuss Kevin's bitch ass out. And can you imagine if Trina just unleashed and said, "You dumb ass psychiatrist. You trying to psych me? You couldn't psych your crazy ass great niece when you need it to. Like, you couldn't step up. You telling me they couldn't give Tabiana that material? She would have ate that up." But this would require this show to actually be creative, and they have refused to do so.
Keela, you did it again. See, this is what I'm talking about. Every time I talk to you, you keep bringing stuff up, because I'm like, they had Kevin talk to Charlotte. He talked to Charlotte about what she was doing. So that's why I say he can't talk to Trina too. Trina, I know you just went through a traumatic circumstance. Would you like to chat?
Yes. Yes. It would have been so good. Cause she could have like had her moment and also cuss out this idiot who I love, because he enables some of this too. Yeah. This is rich storyline, great material for Tabiana. And once again, we're going to Hat Daddy and his problems, which were already resolved. It's just like, what are we doing? What are we doing? We can be doing more with Trina, with all due respect to Hat Daddy, who I like too. And he should be worried about the Savoy, because we'll get to momentarily. You got people fighting over Curtis's business.
Oh my God.
As if they own it.
That was very, very annoying. Like, hearing that conversation, that got on my nerves. I was like, yes. Why is everybody else talking about the Savoy but the man who owns it?
Yes. We'll get to that momentarily as we now get to some hilarity on GH this past Tuesday. So let's just cut straight to the chase. Dante got shot and we thought we were going to lose our guy. And we don't want to lose Dante. He's too fine to go. He's too fine. He's too fine. We don't want to let that fineness bleed out on a dock, you know. So Cyborg Jason has returned. And, you know, in his absence, he's been somewhere, not in Crete. He magically got out of that explosion and the boulders magically lifted from the sky and he was free. And he's been MIA the last two or so years. But now he's back working for the assassin, trying to take out the five families, or now there are two families. And Dante got caught in the crossfire because Chase let his partner get jumped in a two-on-one attack because he listened to Dante, hey, go with the witnesses downtown and make sure they answer the questions and leave me all by myself to fend off a two-on-one attack. But you do you, Chase. But anywho, we got Dante bleeding out and Jason, noted paramedic, is going to elevate the feet, do a little tourniquet on the chest, call up 911 using his voice, like they're not going to use that recording dude to find out who you are. And then he lays the phone down and he says, you're going to be all right, Dante. He leaves the scene. So we got Dr. Dex and Joss showing up, right? And Joss, who is supposed to be in school for pre-med, who is supposed to be cool as a cucumber in times of crisis, looks at Dante and says, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, let me get this straight. You telling me Adam, who was high and just acing tests and shit, could shake his little vagabond ass over there and do more than you doing right now? Girl, but Dex, thank God Dex, noted doctor, was able to save Dante's life and Jocelyn eventually jumped into action. But for y'all to put in the script, I don't know what to do when she's supposed to be in school to know what to do. GH ain't GHing, especially in the hospital department.
My mom and Tiffany had this exact discussion. We said, this is supposed to be a show about medical professionals. This is supposed to be, the show is called General Hospital. And folks don't know how to do things like rescue someone. Also, the fact that they had Dex and Joss be the one to roll up on Dante and then supposedly be the ones to save his life. Like, that was just like, really? I'm like, it didn't make any sense because how far away were, because we don't, I mean, obviously GH didn't tell us where Dex was, you know, down the street when Joss found him. We don't know how far away from Port Charles they were. We don't know how long it was going to take them to get back to Port Charles, but I love my guy Dominic. I love him so much. I do not want Dante to be gone. Like, I can't believe he got shot again a second time. And all I thought about when he got shot was he was actually wearing a bulletproof vest this time. And it took me back to when Dominic was at the GH fan event and he was talking about some of the stuff that Dante has done that's been like kind of dumb. And he talked about the day that he got shot by Sonny. And he was like, well, it was his fault. He went in there without a fucking bulletproof vest on. And I'm like, they have him in a bulletproof vest this time. And he still gets seriously injured, like badly injured. Okay. So, like, I just think that it just didn't make any sense because, like, the way that the scenes played out, it was just dragging on. Like, it was just long for the sake of being long for reasons unknown. Like, I don't get it because, to me, there was no sense of real urgency over Dante being shot. Like, there wasn't. Like, I felt like the stuff with Jason was dragging, like, when he was rendering aid and, you know, calling 911 or whatever, I felt like it was dumb that Chase didn't come back to see what, you know, to see, because he hadn't heard from Dante. I'm like, this is your partner. And it's like, it's not ringing. It's not coming into your mind. Like, hey, I haven't heard from Dante in quite some time. Maybe I should go and check on him. He shows up after the fact. There's not even an officer down call. Like, this is a police officer, and he's fighting for his life. And y'all are acting like he's just some random dude you just happen to find on the street. Like, you're not treating him like he's an officer of the law. It made no sense. And so when Joss was talking and she said, I don't know what to do, I was like, okay, so now that it's Dante that she has to help, she doesn't know what to do. But with Dex, she knew what to do. In 2022, Joss knew what to do every time Dex got hurt. When Dex got hurt, she sprung into action. And that's what was the catalyst for her becoming pre-med, her taking care of him. But now, in 2023, after she's been going through classes for however long, I don't know what to do. And they give it to Dex. They have Dex be the one to be the savior. Like, make it make sense. Like, either she's the rescuer or he is. Like, which one is it? Like, it just doesn't, it doesn't make any sense. Like, the scenes were irritating. And it was just because the writing was just so all over the place. Like, it was just doing too much. It was like, Jason's a rescuer. Joss and Dex are rescuers. Chase comes late. Like, none of it made sense. Like, it just didn't flow to me at all. Like, it did not flow at all. Like, this, the whole scene got on my nerves, to be honest.
It did too. The ambulance is late as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was in Atlanta. You know, if you're not shot or in a car accident, you're not going to get immediate medical attention. Oh. I'm just keeping it a buck. I thought Dante was going to make it. Like, this ambulance taking a sweet ass time to get to the docks. And it was touch and go, but he made it through. And then Chase gonna show up. He's not breathing. Like, oh no, Lord, no. Lord, give him CPR. Breathe some life into those pretty lungs of his. But he's gonna make it. He gonna be all right. But they tried it. Don't scare me like that. Dante's too fine to go. Okay? Mm-hmm. Too fine, too pretty.
Not y'all having Dante show up all this time and be working so, so hard. And then he comes back again and get just for him to get shot. Like, come on.
Now, you know what? This show funny, though, because all we asked for was some paid time off. Not like this. I didn't want him to get shot to get days off.
I did not.
My God. I just want the man to get some vacation time, not medical leave. But he'll be all right. He's going to be okay. He made it through surgery, and he's going to pull it through. Fingers crossed. But just in case, hold your rosary beads like Olivia, okay? And then we get to the rest of Tuesday's GH. And Jasmine, I kind of know her thoughts on this, because we had Shakespeare at a warehouse. So we had Jagger, Anna, Ava, and Sunny. And Jagger is talking about Sunny's past misdeeds when it comes to Karen and Stone and how he became a respectable gangster in Port Charles over the years. And I loved Adam Harrington's performance. He has grown on me so much. I love him as Jagger. I never thought I needed this guy on GH in 2024, but he's the best. He can do serious. He can do comedy with Maxie and Spinelli, as he did on Thursday and Friday. Like, he's a joy, truly a joy to watch. And he was great. He was actually sensational in these scenes. Mm-hmm. As he dragged Sunny for filth about how he treated Karen, how he exploited her, put her on the pole, slept with her. She was underage at the time. And for those that don't remember, Sunny was a piece of shit during the early days of GH. Let's not sugarcoat it. He was no good, trash individual. And then he was there for Stone during his last days, but then Robin lionized him, so therefore the gangster gets respectability in Port Charles. The Godfather does good, and therefore he garners respect and cachet and clout and notoriety for good reasons. And then he called out Anna, saying, and that's why you let him get away with so much stuff, that's why you tolerate him, because your daughter loves him. And Fanola's eyes watered up immediately. I felt that. She was so good. But it felt all out of place. Y'all having this conversation after a shootout, and we're airing out the past. And if it was in a different setting, at a different time, I would have lived. But still, I was loving Adam's performance, and he made me understand Jagger's point of view in a much bigger way, and it painted Sonny in this light that needed to be shined upon to say this guy is a piece of shit, and he hasn't owned up to a lot of his misdeeds, and he knows when it's his time to go, it's probably going to hell, most likely. I mean, let's call it a buck. And then Ava is saying, I believe you when you said that you was trying to help Karen and she was going through this and that. If you look at the footage that was dropped on the timeline a few days later, a whole nother story. So they're trying to recon that as well. But I loved the performance by Adam. Fantastic. It's very funny how the Adams are coming through. Adam Harrington, we got Adam Huss. The Adams are coming through in early 2024 with great performances, but it just felt like out of place moment because then Sonny finds out Dante's shot, and then we get that cliffhanger. It was good, but wrong place, wrong time. And as we talked about earlier, we got Selena and Sonny fighting over Curtis's club as to who's going to be doing the gambling. Like, poker night is now a barter agreement between the two of you, and Curtis is not involved in the negotiations. Like, he doesn't have a say so on if he's gonna wash money or not. Like, this is his club, and you're fighting over his club as if you own it. No, you do not. Take your ass to Intrigue, Selena, with all due respect.
Yeah, that conversation between Selena and Sonny got on my nerves. Like, when they were going back and forth over the Savoy, I was like, does Curtis know y'all doing this? Does Curtis know y'all over here arguing about who's going to be gambling and whatnot? Like, the gambling was already shut down, but you guys are literally sitting here having a conversation and saying, it's going to be me. It's going to be me. Like, what is going on? Like, did y'all talk to the owner of the club about this stuff you're talking about doing? Because where was I? I wish people would stop trying to take over Curtis's club because, you know, Mr. I run a respectable coffee shop. You can't run a gambling ring from somewhere else. Like, you talking about using the Savoy and Selena Wu. Selena has resources. She can easily build up her own little thing. And like you said, the intrigue is right there. Like, you like intrigue and you said it was pretty hopping. So why don't you talk to the owner and see if they want to get down on a side hustle? But yeah, I couldn't stand that conversation because, like I said before, it's just more of the same with them keeping Curtis out of his own club. Because, like I said, we just keep seeing Curtis at the house or he's coming back from GH. He's never at his own club. Like, he used to be at the club all the time when he was up and walking. He was in the club all the time. So I'm like, so what you're telling me is that when he eventually is walking again, that's when you're gonna let him be back at his own club? Because that's a bad look. Like, it's a bad look for you to treat him like, because he's in a wheelchair, he can't be going to the Savoy. He can't go to his own business to look after things and see how things are going. Like, it's just crazy. Like, he hasn't been there consistently for a very, very long time. And I don't like that. But yeah, like, going to the scenes with, you know, with Adam Harrington, Jagger, like, he is doing a really good job. Like, me personally, like I said before, I'm not very familiar with, like, the character of Jagger and everything he was doing, you know, his relationship with Sonny. And I'm like, I know, like, I knew, like, the bare minimum of, like, the type of person that Sonny was. But then I started seeing, like, you know, more and more clips of him. And then, like, you know, even hearing out of the actor's own mouth that Sonny was, you know, like you said, a piece of crap. When he was on the show, like, you know, when that's his origin story, he was a trash man. In some ways, he still kind of is, but like, just like seeing those, like seeing the clips that people put on the timeline, because, you know, receipts are everything. People always have the receipts. It was interesting to see, like, to say the least. But yeah, like, you know, like you said, you already knew my feelings and thoughts on those scenes, but I felt like it would have been, you know, like, it would have held much more weight if it took place somewhere else, because it was just weird. It was a very weird decision for them to have, you know, Jagger take his coat off and, like, in the middle of a crime scene, because they were doing this bust. Like, he gets comfortable, he gets all cozy, like, let me take my coat off. And then he starts talking to Sonny about the type of person that he is right in front of Anna and Ava, which, like I said, that would have worked better if it was in a different setting, not in the, you know, once a sting is done. Like, it didn't work for me, because, like, they're having this conversation while Dante is over here, basically fighting for his life on, you know, on the dock. So it's like, oh, Sonny's son is over here, you know, bleeding out and whatnot, while Jagger is over here reading Sonny for filth. Like, it just, it could have been a totally different place. Like, it could have been, he could have had that conversation back with Sonny when he went to his business to go see him, but they chose to have it at the, you know, at that little setup, which I thought was a weird choice.
Definitely weird, definitely. And it was just good scenes, wrong setting, wrong mm-hmm. time. Would have been more on a different day without all the chaos and fighting over Curtis's club. Definite choices by two mobsters who should know better. But I'll leave that alone. As we get to our final topic for today, Ava and Nina, a friendship I love. They've come a long way since Nina stuck Ava with horse tranquilizer and told her to push out Avery. So I can steal her, because you stole my man and you stole 20 years of my life, bitch. We've come a long way from that to where we are today of them being besties. And Nina's going through it. She's getting divorced, not by choice, has not signed the papers yet. She has the invader, and she is trying to be a publisher of the Fourth Estate. And I love that for her. Alexis being a little bit bitchy, but I'm rooting for Nina. What about it? So Nina gets word that Dante was shot, and she goes to the chapel to check in on Sonny, but she finds Ava. And Ava and Sonny almost had a moment, a moment of them almost locking lips. Thursday cliffhanger heading into Friday. Thank God it did not happen, because Sonny found out that Jason was alive, and he wants to know, why is my friend, my best friend, not communicating with me, and why he's trying to kill me, supposedly. And we had Ava being there to provide emotional support, and then they were getting real close, too close for comfort. So Ava, who knows a lot of this information about what's going on, is not telling Nina a whole lot. And she's trying to keep her distance and trying to be ducky and dodgy. And I love Ava, but lately you've been a really bad friend to Nina, because mm-hmm. you have this relationship with Sonny that's starting to simmer and boil over into something more for the first time in a decade, which is ill. So Nina is trying to salvage her marriage, and she wants Ava's help. And Ava, after flashing back to what she almost did to her best friend, says, I'm going to help you. You can count on me. And they hug it out. And I said to myself, oh, God, I hope that Patrick Mulcahy recons this upon his arrival, because I do not want Nina and Ava fighting over Sonny's shriveled up strudel in 2024. Okay. I don't want them fighting over his dry sauce that can't sauce anymore. Okay. I don't want them fighting over some Italian stale penis. He's not worth it. Both ladies deserve better than his marinara sauce that is just stale and rank in 2024. They need to step up. They need to stand up and say, we will not allow his raggedy ass to come between us. I need Ava to do better. If need be, visit Nicholas in Pentonville and get conjugal visits if you need dick, okay? If you need a fix, you go to Pentonville and you book that ticket and you get that room and you get you some. Don't you even think about climbing Sonny's cannoli. Do not do that. Please, God. And Nina, if you have to, if that man can't appreciate you, Valentine is now free and single, and you can ride on that. And I guarantee you, you will have multiple breathtaking orgasms, something that Sonny cannot give to you in 2024.
Yeah, I feel the relationship, the friendship between Ava and Nina going south really, really fast. And I don't like it, because, I mean, I love my girl Ava, I really do. But yeah, she has been a bad friend to Nina as of late. Like, she hasn't really been around for her too much. Like, she's been I mean, I know she's been calling Nina out on certain things that she's done, but she wasn't really that good of a friend during the SEC shakeup stuff. Like, she was kind of like, well, if you get this, this is what you deserve. Like, it was kind of that attitude. It was kind of like, well, if it happens, it happens. If Sonny finds out, he finds out, and you're going to be in some serious trouble. But I knew already when they moved her into Sonny's penthouse that things were going to get weird. Like, I just knew it. I knew it. I don't want it. I do not want a Sonny and Ava storyline. I don't want them, because when they were getting close in that chapel, I was just like, please, no. Like, please, please, I don't want it. I don't want to see it at all. But, like, it just makes me think, too, like, I'm like, man, like, that's all it takes. That's literally all it takes for you, Sonny. This whole SEC thing and Nina turning Carly and Drew in, that's what it takes for you to be like, I'm done, I don't love you anymore, marriage over, the end, and you move on to Ava. Like, trash man. Like I said, Sonny is a trash man. He really is. And like I said, Ava, the friendship is not, it's not in a good place right now if she's going to be doing all of this. And then I just found myself thinking too, like, when she was basically telling Nina, like, don't sign the divorce papers, like, you know, like that kind of advice. I'm like, where are you going with this? Because she's trying to make it like, we're gonna fight for your marriage. Like, how are you gonna help Nina fight for her marriage when you almost kissed her husband and you have been having these close moments with him and he's seeming to be turning to you for every single solitary aspect of his life right now. Like, how do you see yourself helping Nina? Like, this is not gonna end well. Like, I just see it's not going to end well at all. And I don't want it. I do not want Sonny and Ava. No. Like you said, ill.
I don't want it either. I'm terrified. Like, I will, like, throw shit at my TV if it happens. I have insurance on my television. It'll get repaired. I can call Best Buy Geek Squad and they'll come right by and they'll do what they gotta do.
So like, but, what happened? Like, GH.
GH. And it's not because Trina's not on screen, because I would shoot my television at this point, but it's something even worse. Sonny and Ava blinding my fucking eyes. I cannot take it. Dear God. Mm-hmm. Ava, do better. Get a new guy. Or, like I said, Nicholas is right there. Is he the best? No, but more viable dick than Sonny. I'm just saying, at this stage in the game. But yeah, I love this friendship. I love Maura and I love Cynthia's repartee together, but I do not need them fighting over Sonny in 2024. I cannot. So those are our thoughts this week on GH. Up and down, up and down. Jason's back and okay. Cool. We'll see how the numbers go.
It's already
plain
boring,
and simple.
I mean, really, because it's like, what are we doing that's any different? Like, oh, okay, they think that he might be the one who's coming after Sonny. Like, he might be betraying Sonny.
The one thing I will say, shout out to the liaison fans.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
Shout out to them who says, you know what? We're going to celebrate 25 years of our ship and we're going to have a driving mobile billboard outside of Prospect Studios. Not one day, not 2 days, but 3 days. And they made me like think, wow, I would love to see Liaison rise again in 2024, because they did more promotion for his return to hype up him and Elizabeth than GH did. Like, you got to shout out the fans who do the work for you. And I'm rooting for Liaison fans to have their moment. I want him to be at Elizabeth's door for assistance. I don't want that completely rewritten to serve Carly. I want them to have their moment, because they did more promotional street teamwork than this fucking show did. And it's free promotion. It's love for what they support. And they are a lot of us in some ways, the Sabrina fans that know what it's like to campaign, fight, and you go through hell and high water to get what you want, which is results. And I hope they get it. Is it my favorite thing in the world? No, but I support the fuck out of people that go for what they support and love, and they put their money where they should if they want to, goddammit.
Like I said, I don't even go here, but I'm rooting for the liaison fans too. Like I really am, because it would be nice to do a little shake up where it's not it's not the expected thing that everybody wanted to see, the Carly and Jason show. Like I give the Liz and Jason story a chance. Throw something in there. Throw some competition in there with the Finn storyline. Shake up Finn and Liz. Come on, do it. I dare you, GH. Do that. That'll be more exciting than this played out Carly and Jason storyline they want to keep on doing. Like they keep on wanting to do that over and over and over again. Carly's world, Jarly, like let's try Liz and Jason again because they have history too. Come on. Don't be afraid.
Don't be scared. You know what you got to do. And shout out to the Liz fans because I'm a Liz fan too.
Me too.
Free Liz. Free her. She deserves better. And like Tabiana Ali, Rebecca Herbst is a franchise player who's been unutilized for years. And if we can get Jason by her door and he can see his kids, and he can be a father, and he can take care of his shit, and maybe shake up that relationship with Finn's raggedy ass, so be it. Give me some competition. Sorry, diversity. Finn can find somebody else. Call Hayden. Wake her up. Wherever she is, get her back, okay? Get the other sister. But you leave this sister alone and let Jason reconnect with his baby mama, okay? And then float around Sam and just pay child support because you owe her. But and you owe Liz too. Back pay last few years. They both need checks. And I know you got the money from the assassin, but I'll let that go. But as we get to Sabrina speculations for the week ahead or lack thereof, let's not lie here, people. It's thin in these streets. You just got to watch every day to see if our girl shows up. But we do have on Tuesdays, General Hospital, nothing. Today, nothing. On, of course, on GH Negro Wednesday, Selena shares information with Curtis.
I'm taking your club back.
Without your permission, I just bought it.
Gambling again. The gambling is back on.
Curtis, without your knowledge, I brought back the poker table and the chips and the cards and the chairs. You be washing my money 3 days a week, so roll your ass down there and do your job.
Right? Really?
Okay. Lee is not here. I don't know where Lee is, supposedly.
It would be nice to see if we change the venue and Curtis is actually at the Savoy when she stops by instead of him being at home, because these house calls are getting annoying.
Now, Lydia did tease they were at the Savoy.
Oh, okay. Good.
On set. It has not aired yet, so we might get that change of scenery very soon.
All right, please. Let's
Fingers
it,
crossed.
Please.
Meanwhile, Jordan has doubts about her career. Let me guess. Deputy mayor job kind of sucks. She wants to be back in law enforcement.
I already knew that based on last week's conversation when she was talking about Nathan, when she invoked Nathan West. Because she was basically, like, the conversation, the way she was talking, I felt like she was having an Alexis conversation. Like, you know how they keep on dropping these anvils with Alexis talking about how much she misses being a lawyer? Because they had Jordan basically talking like she feels kind of like she's not really doing anything as a deputy mayor. Because even when she talks to people like Chase, she's talking to him like an officer of the law. So it kind of frustrates me because they had her become the deputy mayor and she's no longer the police commissioner. Anna's the police commissioner now. So if Jordan leaves her position as deputy mayor, she's just going to be a basic run-of-the-mill police officer. So she's going to be demoted. Like, think about that. That's a demotion.
It really is. It's a choice. Can she be co-police commissioner or something?
We'll see. We'll see what they do. We'll see how they decide to play that out.
Yes. Can she be like head of detectives like Mac was, where he got elevated to police commissioner if she wants to get back in law enforcement? Can she be in a position of power at the PCPD?
And
something.
You say who would take over as deputy mayor? Like,
that's a good question.
We'll
see. But I forgot, Tuesday, Finn assesses Heather, who gives a shit.
Ugh, it's just going to be, like I said, more my daughter. You know, I found myself thinking, I was like, something is seriously wrong with Heather because she fell out in the chapel after she, oh, that's right, after Laura pulled a Trina and knocked her upside the head. And she's like, oh, I didn't hit her that hard. But anyway, like, I said, maybe this is going to be Heather's exit story. Is Heather going to die?
I hope so.
Because it's like, Heather's gone. If, you know, so I'm like, is now that Esme's gone, is Heather going to be next? Because what, I mean, really, everybody's asking the same question. What does Heather have as a storyline without talking about Esme all the time?
I know. Therefore, the Grim Reaper can come for her ass.
You know.
And
watch Finn. I just had a thought. Since Finn is the one assessing Heather, I'm saying this right now. I just thought about this. What if Finn is like, well, you know how that time that you were going around hooking everybody, the poison or whatever you were touching is in your body now? Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be a little bit of a twist? It's like what she was using to kill people ends up killing her, because Finn is an infectious disease doctor, and he's the one who was always figuring out what was used for the hook killings.
Sweet poetic justice. The poison took 2 years too late to activate, but hey, at least we're here now. As on Friday's GH on the Ides of March, March 15th, Caesar's Day. Maybe it'd be Heather's day when she dies, but she gets medical information.
That's why I said maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's all that poison that she was exposed to was finally is hitting her. Because I was thinking, she's like, I got pain, I got a rash. Finn, do something. You survived your malpractice suit, so now do your doctoring again.
Actually, don't say there's no cure, you're gonna die. There's nothing I can do for you. I hope that's a diagnosis and prognosis. That's my prayer. As we alluded to, Kevin reveals something to Marshall about his diagnosis.
All of a sudden, the doctors on GH want to be doctors.
Now they want to be professionals. Fuck out of here. But as I said before, despite Trina not being in the spoilers, you got to watch every day at 2:58 Eastern, Pacific, Central, Mountain to find out if she's going to be on the show. And sometimes they're sneaky. She might not even be in the opening segment. Mm-hmm. So you just got to watch and be alert and hope and pray she's on the show. But if not, if we reach 3 weeks of no Trina, oh, I'm flipping shit next week. I am not going to be happy, and I will do something to my TV. I will. And it won't be because Ava and Sunny did something. Okay. I'm irritated now, but may we protect our furniture and may it have insurance along the way. As we now get to our song picks of the week, Jasmine's going to stun all of us right now, because she stunned me off the air.
Yeah. The stunning news is I have no songs. I tried to think, and I'm like, we had no Trina. I don't know where we're going with anything. I got nothing.
I got two songs. I got two. I was thinking what I'm going to pick for this week, and I had a song in the reserves from last week. I thought about it after the show, like, damn it. But I'm going to use it this week, and I told Jasmine off the air, this is a very challenging song to break down lyrically because it's a lot. And it's a flow to it. I'm going to take my time with it. But I love this song. It's by Poe from the Haunted album, to go along with the House of Leaves book as well. And it's called Walk the Walk. This is about, you know, walking to the beat of your own drum and being defiant and going through a lot of shit in life. And I think that's something that can definitely apply for Trina and in some ways, Tabiana as well. Two songs for our character and our favorite actress on GH right now. And the key lyrics are, as I take a deep breath, whew. My mother spent 10 years sitting by a window, scared if she spoke, she would die of a heart attack. She listened as her dream silently screamed. They drowned like little dolphins caught in a fishnet. Dear world, I'm pleased to meet you. Hey, everybody, when you walk the walk, you got to back it all up. You got to talk the talk. Hey, everybody, when I hear the knock, don't want to measure out my life to the tick of a clock. Hey, everybody, when my daddy died, he had a sad, sad story written in his eyes. Hey, everybody, when you walk the walk, you cannot measure out your life to the tick of a clock. I want to walk to the beat of my own drum. Hey, everybody, can you walk the walk? You got to back it all up, but can you talk the talk? Hey, everybody, can you walk the walk? I want to walk to the beat of my own drum. I want to walk to the beat of my own drum. I want to live to the beat of my own drum. I want to take to the beat of my own drum. I want to hang 10 high, say pleased to meet you. Give to the beat of my own drum. I want to sing to the beat of my own drum. I want to fly, cry, win, lose, live, die, take 5, pleased to meet you. My daddy spent 10 years living on the outside looking in. He thought that he would never get back. Watched his dream walk across the silver screen, and he was standing there when the theater went pitch black. Dear world, I'm pleased to meet you. Hey, everybody, when I walk the walk, I gotta back it all up. I gotta talk the talk. Hey, everybody, when I hear the knock, I don't want to measure up my life to the tick of a clock. I want to live to the beat of my own drum. I want to laugh to the beat of my own drum. I want to play to the beat of my own drum. I want to hang 10 high, say pleased to meet you. I want to screw up to the beat of my own drum. I want to take it out of town and do it to my drum. Scream, shout, wipe out, make love to my baby. It's a wonderful idea, but it doesn't work. My own drum, my own beat. Hey, did you ever get the feeling that it's really a joke? You think you got it all figured out and then you find out that you don't. So you say goodbye to the world and now you're floating in space. You got no sense of nothing, not even a time or a place. Then suddenly you hear it. It's the beat of your heart. And for the first time in your life, you know your life is about to start. I want to walk to the beat of my own drum. And I made it through the song, thank God.
Wow, those lyrics. Ooh. I can see what you're talking about. Those
yes.
Lyrics, woo.
Woo. Love the song. Great beat. But it is woo, a challenge to get through in terms of the cadence and everything. But my second song this week is a song that is definitely applicable to Trina and Tabiana. I love this song by Banks, and it is entitled Goddess.
I love that song. I love that album.
I love it too. I'm staring at it on my shelf right now. It's red and unmistakable. Yes. But key lyrics include, she gave it all, you gave her shit. She could have done just anything or anyone because she's a goddess. You never got this. You put her down. You liked her hopeless to walk around feeling unnoticed. You should have crowned her because she's a goddess. You never got this. Now you got to deal with this glitch on your shoulder, fucking with a goddess and you got a little colder. It's colder. It's colder. Fucking with a goddess and you got a little colder. Finally surfaced above doubts. Feeling about this, you came around because she's a goddess. Finally saw this. And now you're back trying to claim her because she's gone. And now without her, you all alone because she's a goddess. You should have saw this. Now you got to deal with this glitch on your shoulder. Fucking with a goddess and you got a little colder. It's colder, colder. Fucking with a goddess and you get a little colder. And the lyrics repeat. And those are my two songs for the week by Poe and Banks.
I actually just got one now because I was
thinking, oh my gosh,
because in keeping with the theme of, you know, Tabiana and Trina, this song I think is fitting. I think Hype Zombies by Paris, I think it's fitting because I was thinking about what you with the lyrics you're reading with, you know, from Banks, and the key lyrics are, I've been taking notes of everyone who went and slept on me, dug a couple of graves, they got their names up by the mausoleum. Kiss them all goodbye. Look in the eyes when I say rest in peace. Give just what you get. Place your bets. It's my destiny. I've been taking notes of everyone who went and slept on me. Dug a couple graves. They got their names up by the mausoleum. Kiss them all goodbye. Look in the eyes when I say rest in peace. Give just what you get. Place your bets. It's my destiny. I let it slide every time, but that's on me. I let it die on the side what you told me. When it's time, when it's right, yeah, you'll want me. When it's time, I'll be back like a zombie. Let it slide every time, but that's on me. I let it die on the side what you told me. When it's time, when it's right, yeah, you'll want me. When it's time, I'll be back like a zombie. That's my song. I got one song.
And it fits perfectly too. Perfect, perfect, perfect. So these songs are definitely for Trina and Tabiana. And we're still pushing through. We're going to keep hope alive, keep fighting as always. We are going to get through this drought somehow, some way. And we're going to keep raising our voices because we will not be silenced. Trust and believe that. And you're going to get the best available information from us, by us, every single week. And with that, this wraps up a very fun, very fiery edition of the Serena Sessions right here on WST. I enjoyed it. I got a lot off my chest in 2 hours. Once again, we made it through 2 hours to get you guys through your Monday and the rest of this week. As always, Jasmine, thank you for joining me as we recap the week that wasn't for our babies, but it was still a lot to unpack and talk about.
Yes, it was. And we already wondered over there on the timeline that we were going to go Daenerys Targaryen on this show. We said Dracarys to Eugene. I mean, for real, for real. I'm just keeping it real, because if we are, in fact, heading into a third week with no Trina on our screens, and then when we do get her back, if it's for some... Yeah. Just saying. We're not going to keep quiet.
We're not. We refuse to stay quiet. We refuse to accept any excuse because it's not going to work. And we know the truth. Deep down, we know the truth. If you know, you know. And that is the thing that gives us the motivation to keep fighting, because we know we have something and someone worth fighting for at the end of the day. And that is so important. So keep your heads up. We got this. Much love to Tabiana. We miss you on our screens. Hopefully we see you sometime this week. If not, God willing, next week. But it's been 3 weeks too long, and we're going to keep raising hell, good trouble along the way. But we'll be back next Monday to talk about it, what it is, what it's going to be right here on the session. So until then, we'll watch the show so you don't have to. For myself and for Jasmine, in the words of the great Trina Carisha Buffy Robinson, goodbye, room. Thank you.
Goodbye, room. Thank you.